The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody.
This week on Super Skull, there's four of us. If only there was a superhero team where there's four of them. Plus, we talk about Marvel hip-hop variants and your comic book picks for the week of September 23rd. I'm just the kind who will break your heart. Alrighty, welcome to Super Skull, your weekly new comic day audio digest from Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996, recorded in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library and the Freedom Shrine.
Freedom!
Shrine is never free. My name is Nick Weibar. I'm joined by Marcus Schwimmer.
Heyo.
How you doing, Marcus?
I'm doing great.
You're looking great.
Thanks, man. That's
I'm glad you kept your shirt on, but you're looking great.
Well, you know, maybe next time.
And I'm also here with Christian Silberice.
It's true. Like my mama said, first goal, always get invited back.
You got, welcome back, buddy.
Yep, whenever you're a guest,
you're
get invited back.
You're doing a great job. We have, you're sitting in for Curtis today, in a way.
It's me, it's Curtis, but I'm actually Christian.
We got no Curtis. He's out in Grand Rapids. And speaking of Grand Rapids, we have a very special guest today. We got a four-man podcast today.
We're like the Fantastic Four.
Oh, you said that. You were so excited that you thought of that.
Yeah, I'm the thing.
We're joined by Jeff Millard. Jeff, how are you?
I am doing fantastic.
This is our first remote-in podcast where we're not like sitting at the table with you. How is it? What's it like over there? Describe your environs.
Well, it's kind of dark because I have the lights turned off for mood lighting. You know, got to set the stage. I feel a little disconnected. But at the same time, I can feel you guys here. You know, the warmth of your love. I can feel it.
You can see Marcus, right?
It actually just like freaked out on my computer because, you know, computers. And yeah. So I can't see him anymore.
Well,
sadly, I can't see his beautiful face.
It's to your benefit.
Oh, there it is.
Can we get Jeff some helicopter sounds for the background?
Why?
Well, you know, like back in the day when you tune on for the news, mm-hmm. the guy in the remote location would be like, and here's Jeff from the Channel 4 chopper.
So he's like in a war zone?
No. Just
oh, he's like the traffic cop.
Yeah.
He's like doing Doppler 4 type Doppler, stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
This is Jeff with the traffic sports.
Sports traffic.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, the sports are good and traffic is pretty tight on I-96, if you know what I mean.
Sports are strong. That's good.
Yep.
Well, I think we should talk about comics. What do you guys think?
Let's do it.
Okay. And speaking of comics, so Jeff works in Grand Rapids. The manager out there, Ms. Charlie Tucker, and Jeff are working on a new segment for Super Skull.
Holy moly.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. Jeff, can you tell us what you guys are cooking up?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be cooking up like one-shot episodes where we're just going to come on, a little blurb episode that's going to be an addition to the Super Skull, so not our own podcast, just an addition to, where we're going to be like digging down and like dissecting certain comic books. So like our first one that we're going to be doing is going to be about the Inhumans. So we're going to get down and dirty with the Inhumans and get you like everything that you need to know in order to like read the new Inhuman series that's going to be coming out in October. So going through the history of them, so you understand like who are the Inhumans, what have they been up to, everything that you need to know leading all up to it.
So that's going to be the first episode, and is that the idea going forward? You guys are just going to like pick a character or a universe and dive into it?
Is that absolutely, yeah.
Or is it going to be all Inhumans all the time?
No, we could do it all about the Inhumans all the time. I wouldn't mind, but we're going to be doing different things every episode.
That's awesome, man. So excited to have you guys.
That sounds awesome. Like,
yeah, I'm super excited.
Considered information instead of just like the bullshit that we do, which is just like show up and talk.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, but one thing that we need is a name still.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah. Because we got to have some really, like, badass name.
So the beats are, it's Jeff and Charlie. They're going to talk about a subject. They're going to talk about it in depth. They're going to do a little bit of research. It's going to come out semi-frequently. It's going to be, you know, maybe once every couple of weeks, once a month, something like that. If any of our listeners have any ideas as to what to call that thing, whatever it is, shoot it over to us.
We'd love to hear it.
Superskull at vaultofmidnight.com.
That's right. If you can incorporate skull in it in any way, Curtis is more likely to greenlight it.
Yeah, or if it's just good.
Yeah, that too. Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Well, I'm really excited about that. And that's going to be, do we know when the first episode's going to be airing?
It's going to be, so it would be the week before the new Inhumans comic comes out, which is October 21st. So it would probably be coming out on probably around, like, I would say like the 14th. How does that sound?
I think that sounds super. And producer Rachel Polk is hearing about this maybe for the first time right now.
Yes, for the first time.
Which I'm just realizing. I'm sure she'll make time to edit it and make it sound really good.
Okay.
All right, let's move into some big picks.
Let's do it.
What do you guys think? Every week we each pick some stuff that we think you should read. If you're going to read nothing else over the course of your whole week, consider at least the following. I think we should start with you, Jeff, since you are our Skype guest.
Oh, why, thank you. So polite. So, since this is my first time on the Super Skull, I decided to go a little crazy. And I picked not one, but two big picks.
I thought you were going to say you picked porn.
Well, let's not be obvious here.
Yeah,
we can be that obvious.
Got to throw him for a loop.
You picked two picks, man?
I did.
Did you not get the memo? All right, what do you got?
Wait, we have a memo?
There is no memo. What do you got? What do you pick?
So, my first pick is the book by Matt Madden, which it's just a one-shot book, just came out, Drawn Onward is what it's called. And so this book is published by Retrofit Big Planet, which I'm going to be honest, I have not heard of before this book.
They did something else recently. Anyway, yeah, Drawn Onward, tell us about it.
Yeah, so this book is absolutely gorgeous. It's all black and white. Absolutely wonderful art style, where it's got this kind of sketchy look to it. Not sketchy as in like, whoa, dude, that guy's sketchy, but sketchy as in like drawing wise. And it's really cool and opens up, and it's actually from the perspective of this woman who is writing this comic book. So it's kind of got this whole meta feel where she's like writing the comic while we're watching her like write the comic, and she's addressing us as the readers, which is like immediately like launches you into it. It's really kind of got a cool feel to it. But she's telling you about this story, about how she meets this random guy on the subway. And he like comes up to her and he just like randomly comes in. And he's like, this is the last chance. And she's like, what? I don't know who you are. And he's just like, please, why are you doing this to me? I'm desperate. And she's like, well, I don't even know this dude. And it's really weird and throws her off. And she kind of like just gets away from him. She's like, that's weird. And then she keeps running into this guy. And it keeps getting weirder and weirder where, like, all of a sudden he'll, like, jump in like it's the middle of a conversation, like, talking to her. And she's like, what's up with this guy? But as it progresses and she keeps seeing him, she's got this, like, strange affection growing for him. And she's, like, talking about, she's like, am I starting to feel attracted to my stalker? This is really weird. And so each time she ends up meeting him, she starts meeting him and talks to him for a little bit more. And it ends up escalating until they end up, like, actually, like, fully, like...
Don't spoil it, Jeff. Don't do it.
Yeah, what?
And then it's gone. We don't know what it is. We don't know. I won't let you spoil anything else. But this book is awesome, and it keeps going through.
I'm reading here that this
stuff happens.
I'm reading here that this book was a palindrome, that you can read it from the beginning or from the back, and it's two different narratives going both ways.
Yeah. And that is what is so awesome about this book.
Whoa.
Yeah. You literally get done with it. And so the writer, her, who's drawing the comic, tells you, the reader, to read it backwards. And it's like, and it totally works. It's a completely different story from the other direction. And it, whoa, like, blew my mind.
Yeah. That sounds cool.
That sounds pretty hidden,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. It was so cool.
So that's Drawn Onward.
Yep.
From Retrofit. Awesome. Comics. What else do these guys do? I have to know. The Unmentionables. That sounds really familiar.
Oh, and they also just put out Debbie.
Debbie's Inferno, which came out last week. That's right. That's right. Very cool. Well, that was a really good first pick. What you got? Can you top it with your second pick?
I think I can. It's gonna be hard. But my second pick is Avatar: The Last Airbender, Smoke and Shadow Part 1.
So this is part of the kind of long ongoing comic series sequel to Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yes,
by Gene Luen Yang.
Yep.
How'd you like it? How'd you like the new one?
I loved it. So I've been loving this series, period. Because I loved Avatar The Last Airbender so much. I loved that TV show. It's amazing. And this comic series is absolutely perfect follow-up to it. Jean Lun Yang is an absolute genius when it comes to writing. I think we can all agree on that. He's a genius, especially when writing Avatar. He captures everything that made the show so amazing. The tone of the characters, he understands them so perfectly. And the art also, which is amazing. It captures it so well. And the art is, I'm going to botch this guy's name. It's Gurihiro, I think is how you pronounce it. But I'm horrible at pronouncing names. But the art is amazing as well. Looks just like the show. And this this particular one, so Smoke and Shadows Part 1, is a continuation of the series, as we mentioned. Particularly follows right after The Search, which is the like story arc that followed before this. And so it follows particularly Zuko, who is the Fire Lord, which this a lot of these names won't make sense unless you've watched the show.
Oh, but I have, Jeff.
Oh, I knew that if there was one person that had watched the show, it was you.
Zuko's my favorite character, too, so I'm very excited for
this. He's got a good arc.
He's got a good arc.
He changes as a man.
And he's voiced in the TV show by the young gentleman who played Rufio.
That's true.
In Hook.
Oh.
Yep.
Rufio.
Yeah.
Christian, do you ever see this show?
Oh, yeah. Avatar, I mess with it. Yeah. I was going to ask you, how much flying dog action is up in this new
Appa's volume? Appa's not a flying dog.
What is he?
He is an air bison.
He's an air bison.
But he looks like a Saint Bernard.
I think you're seeing what you want to see.
I had a Saint Bernard when I binge watched Avatar. I'm putting that on him. Yeah. I'm putting my norms on that flying water buffalo.
Yeah, that's bison. Air right. Bison.
That's not cool.
Water buffalo is a different element.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
So you dug it? It's staying true to the rest of that series.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a perfect continuation of it. Just continues to expand on the Avatar universe in such a perfect, absolutely perfect way. It's so good.
How old is Aang? Do they make note of how old Aang is at this point?
Is he aging?
He is aging. I don't know exactly if they say what his age is, but it's not taking that far after the events of Avatar The Last Airbender.
The end.
Jeff, do you think that these books hold up for people that have not seen the show, or is this strictly for fanboys and girls?
So I thought about it long and hard as I read it, and I feel like you could try and read it if you hadn't watched the show, but they kind of give you a very brief overview of the show, but it just doesn't capture anything. Mm-hmm. And I think most of the characters and the development is really lost if you haven't watched the show. So I say that's probably the only downside I could possibly say to this comic is that it's strictly like written for fans of the show. It's really hard for a new person to just like jump into this world of Avatar.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Everyone should watch that show, though.
But everyone should watch that show, though.
Yeah. Adult, youth, doesn't matter. Watch Avatar The Last Airbender.
It's kind of it takes a while for you to realize how good it is, I think. Like, it doesn't come right out of the gate. It seems like a kid's show at first.
First six episodes, yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, slapsticky, and he's sliding down hills and falling on his butt a lot.
Yeah,
young Aang.
Aang's a little waka waka, a little bit.
Exactly, and that changes a lot. It's probably like midway through the first season.
Remind me the non-airbender brother's name.
What is his name?
Sokka.
Sokka. The development of that character in that show is like so good.
Oh yeah.
Because he starts out as definitely like the comedic relief, but by the end of it, like a dude has to answer some questions in his life.
Yeah.
By the end of that show, it's so good. So good.
The animation on this animated show is preposterous.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's gorgeous.
And it's like just long form shit too. It's a kid's show on Nickelodeon. It's aimed at a pretty young audience, but each episode, you can be lost if you just dive in the middle. It is not like a one and done kind of thing. Like each episode does not stand on its own really. It's very serialized. In a cool way.
And we're like 10 years out from Avatar originally being on.
Oh, my God.
Maybe.
Is that true? Yeah, I think you're
right. In another 10 years, I want to talk to those 26-year-olds who watched that show when they were six.
Yeah.
I bet they're like, probably call their mom on her birthday. Probably real sweet. Really remember anniversaries. They're holding doors open for people.
You think they're just better people?
I think they're just probably more kick ass.
I think you're probably right.
And they probably all want to be like a bender, which like is never going to happen. And that's a bummer. But like,
oh,
they're just gonna
spoiler
like,
alert.
They're going to like
everybody. It's never going to happen.
They're going to use they're just going to use their heart better. Gonna be sweeter peeps.
The power of heart.
Super heart powers.
Yeah,
I believe it.
They'll all be heart benders.
Yeah, heart benders, which we can all do.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure Bruce Lee.
Those kids are probably also gonna like go on to make really sweet stuff.
Yeah,
I bet.
They're probably going to make other really sweet kids.
Yeah,
be like, hey.
I was thinking like cartoons, but yeah, kids.
Okay, yeah. Well, they did like a cartoon for the first 6 years.
Yeah. A newly born child is like a cartoon.
Yeah, I'm basically drunk all the time. Whoa, waka waka. This is why I don't have kids.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. Those are some good picks.
But this is 2015 Eisner Award Best Writer recipient Gene Ling Yang.
Yeah, that's correct.
Who will be up in the Vault of Midnights.
Yes, he's going to be...
First weekend of October.
October 4th. He'll be at every Vault of Midnight. That's right.
Signing books, talking stuff, mm-hmm. hopefully giving out complimentary high fives.
Yeah, Ann Arbor at 11 a.m., and he'll be swinging by Grand Rapids around, 4 p.m.?
Yep.
Something like that?
Or 6.
Sounds right.
Yeah, or 6. It might be 6.
I think it's 6.
I'm really excited. And I'm still trying to figure out a way to get Curtis to interview him in his car.
That would be so rad.
About it. Not in secret. I don't think we should do it in secret.
Right.
We do it right out in the open.
Right.
Thinking about it. Anyway, thanks for the picks, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Christian, what do you got for us?
Oh, man. Okay. I'm going a little wacky. A lot of good books out this week, but I was drawn to my man, Michael DeForge. He is a very short-form cartoonist. He's really into the cartooning form. Some of his stuff is classic cartooning. Some of it's Western comics. Some of it's very manga-influenced. Some of it is completely looping and makes no sense to me at all, which I love.
Do you have any other titles off the top of your head that this dude did, Michael DeForge? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, he has a pretty highly acclaimed book that came out last year called Ant Colony.
Yeah.
A lot of his stuff is...
That's the one.
...is compilations of a lot of short-form work. Even Lose itself here, the issue I'm excited about, Lose number 7, is 3 short stories. He at one point was pitching a cartoon to the old Cartoon Network. The title is eluding me, but it's something hilarious where basically a class of kids that is scored the lowest on a standardized testing, so they get confined and left alone in an abandoned shopping mall in the Midwest.
okay.
It looks like the pitch for it is completely silly. The concept designs look awesome and mind-bending and like a kind of weird Adventure Time, but without any pretense of being for kids at all.
That Ant Colony book he did was on a bunch of people's best of the year.
Yeah, last year people were going nuts for it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what does that get you? But that 25 cents will get you
apparently,
a sandwich.
Apparently it gets you to Lose number 7, which
what's,
is totally rad.
What's this book about?
It's 3 short stories. They're all really good. They're all... The bookends to it are a little abstract, but they're doing real cool stuff. But the meat of it, the center, is about a...
And by bookends, you mean the stories on... There's like an intro story that's separate from the main story?
Yes,
okay,
correct.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, there's probably a 4-page cartoon at the beginning and a 4-page cartoon at the end that are kind of a little more abstract, but hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
The meat of it, the centerpiece, is a short story about a young lady who is taking care of her father, and he's a little bit of a curmudgeon, but he's pretty hilarious. He's a pretty funny dude, and while watching some kind of B-grade movies that he finds on the street, he discovers a kind of B-grade actor and former professional wrestler that looks just like her dad, and they try to kind of figure out this mystery of why does this guy look like him and what's going on.
Yeah.
And some very absurd, goofy, heartfelt things happen. It's a little sad. It's a little funny. It's also totally odd and weird and is locked down to a 8-panel grid, which I like quite a bit.
Every page is an 8-panel.
Yeah. Every page 8-panel.
Yeah.
Full on locked in there, and it's like
she's not really playing with it at all. She's like sticking to that.
Just sticking to
thing.
It. Yeah. There's yeah. nothing breaking outside the panel. No moving stuff around. Just laying it out. It's very kind of like a master shot when they're filming a movie. It's, here's the whole camera's aimed on the room. There's people walking in, walking out. Yeah. Super good stuff, and a little bit farther on the opposite end of the spectrum of your mainstream books. It was very cool to see. Again, it kind of reminds me of its blend of bizarre and absurd and real emotions. Reminds me of Adventure Time in a way, but completely different at the same time.
That sounds great, man. We can hear just the good times they're having in the Grand Rapids shop.
Seriously.
In the background.
Yeah, they're having a party out
Are
there.
Are they just
that's
yucking
sure.
it up?
Sounds like a bunch of people there just read One Man War on Terror.
Yeah, that's probably what happened.
Yeah, that's definitely what happened. Yeah.
Jeff, have you read this book, One Man War on Terror?
I flipped through it, but I have not read it myself.
Okay.
Marcus, what was your review of One Man War on Terror?
So you hypothesized that I would not like One Man War on Terror.
That's right.
Correct?
Yeah, that's right.
My review of One Man War on Terror is... I'm glad that I live in a country where people have the freedoms to publish things like One Man War on Terror. and that's it.
That's all you have to say about it?
I'm glad I live in a country where One Man Terror can be published.
So you recommend it?
No, not in the slightest.
You don't want to elaborate on your feelings on One Man War on Terror?
All right, so there's a scene. Children, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Pluggers.
Oh, it's about to get extremely explicit?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's I'm warning.
Maybe we dance around it because it gets extremely graphic.
Two people. I'll try to. I will put a censored flourish okay. on the description. I'm going to set the scene, if you would.
All right.
A man and a man are in a pilot in a cockpit mm-hmm. of an airplane, and they're about to engage in intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
One man looks at the other and says, I'm going... to engage in intimacy with you.
I'm going to enjoy you.
I'm going to enjoy this moment with yeah. us together. And the other man looks at him and says, you are going to enjoy this moment with us
so my
together. But and I'm being very
my
censored
thing is
right now.
What you're saying right now sounds like a really nice moment.
Yeah, it does. I'm putting it in kind of the Jane Austen style of writing.
Jane Austen.
Yeah, it's who
what's also happening in this scene is that the plane is crashing
yeah.
and that the One Man War on Terror just single-handedly took out a bunch of terrorists and innocent bystanders with an Uzi?
It's a submachine gun. Let's go submachine gun.
Yeah.
But so what I've just said, turn up the crude factor 1,000%.
So you didn't like it?
No, it did. It did very little for me.
It is very crude.
It did very little okay. for me.
The important
yeah,
thing
that was the one scene that I flipped to when I was like flipping through that, and yeah, I had the same impression. I was just like,
I might have leapt from my seat and fist pumped when I got to that part.
I gotta say, we don't have to keep talking about One Man War on Terror.
I'm sorry, brother.
But if I was not sold until I got to that scene.
Are you serious?
And then I became, because I at that point I saw what he was doing. I'd be like, oh, this is so, because earlier in the book, he's doing his thing. He's One Man War on Terroring, and he's, you know, shooting flying cars through the sky, and he makes love to a woman in a really graphic way. And then it's like, okay, I see what they're making
this
fun of.
Thing.
It's like,
okay,
that's
cool.
That's fine. Yeah. But for it to be the way that they approached it in a cockpit of a plane that's exploding, two dudes in the cockpit, like, it's like, oh, this is, nobody saw this coming, nobody saw that coming, and I was genuinely surprised by it, and that's when I was like, oh, I now understand.
It's a very unique book. Is it good or bad?
I don't know. Anyway, I don't know how we started talking about One Man War on Terror.
You knew it was going to happen today. There's
sorry
no question
that. I'm really glad that Marcus read it, and he really took that chance.
And I read it cover to cover.
And that's great.
I did do that.
You're also giving us the Jane Austen version of your reaction to it, because you were shouting about it quite a bit the other day.
Yeah, it's a giant pile of garbage.
All right. We're getting a specific note from our producer to move on. So let's move on. But Christian's pick was Lose number 7.
Number 7. Don't lose this opportunity to read a great comic book.
You're the best.
I liked what I read. It kind of was like a little Chris Ware-y.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yep, I did get that.
I was really digging it. Marcus, did you have a pick this week?
Oh, I guess I did. Hey, Wild's End is back.
Woo!
Let's talk about, we just talked about One Man War on Terror, one of the worst books I've ever read. Let's talk about the best book I've ever read, and it's Wild's End, which is coming out in trade paperback very soon. So
The first volume
was supposed to be out already, but it got pushed back. It is coming out very soon. This is Wild's End, The Enemy Within. And what I love about this book, same creative team, Dan Abnett and Ian J. Colbert, they're back with the same characters that we fell in love with in Volume 1, but they're in a totally new situation. And it's fresh, and it's awesome, but it doesn't miss a beat. Puts you right back in that storyline. This book kicks ass.
So whereas the first one is kind of like a War of the Worlds kind of countryside, we don't know what's going on, there's aliens, we're fighting them, we're doing our best to like figure out the situation. This is like they're interned, basically.
Yeah,
the government has arrested all of them and has been interrogating them for months. And so, and the whole town is on lockdown. What is it? Lower Crow Church? Is that the name of the... It was so good, and the tone is different now, and the premise is different than it was. I think it's so cool that they just totally shifted gears, but that the character, it's the exact same characters. And now we know them so well that it's like, I just loved it. I thought it was great.
Can we talk about my man, Clyde Slipaway?
Clyde Slipaway.
He's a Navy veteran. He's a real man of action, kind of a Hemingway stuck in this sleepy British town.
That's what you say about everybody you like.
He also happens to be...
You call them a Hemingway.
He is a Hemingway. This dude is a Hemingway, though. Like, he fights people with his bare hands, and if he can't do that, he shoots them with a double-barrel shotgun. Well, like,
I like that.
Yeah.
Everything you're saying is wrong, but please keep
he
going.
He does do both those things.
Okay, just keep going.
But he also happens to be a dog human.
Yeah.
Which is totally great.
That is really
great. I love it. I said this about the first volume. It's a twist on all of the young storybook sceneries that we fell in love with as children. Mm-hmm. Now retelling in Wild's End. This is a great book.
It's so good.
It's so good. The back matter is wonderful on all these issues. There's like so much in this comic other than just comic book. Mm-hmm. There's maps and little stories in the back of this one. Ooh. We get a little letter from inside the refugee camp. Wild's End. Say a lot of books are in my top 10. Wild's End is number one and has been for a long time. My favorite book of last year, finally continued. Grade A stuff, Wild's End.
I loved all of the new anthropomorphic animals that we get.
Yeah.
There's a buck?
Oh, the general. Yes, yeah. He's a buck. He's a stag.
Brigadier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He's a brigadier, yeah.
I love the very rotund, like, tomcat dude.
Sci-fi writer?
Yeah.
Did you read this, Jeff?
I did. I loved this one.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I loved the Wild's End that came before it so much, and this was, like, it perfectly continued it. Like, oh my goodness. The best way I've heard Wild's End described is it's War of the Worlds meets Wind in the Willows.
Yes.
And that's such a perfect comparison. It's so amazing.
Yeah, if you like good comics, read Wild's End.
Can you read Wild's End, The Enemy Within, cold?
I wouldn't.
No.
I wouldn't deprive yourself of the first six issues.
I don't think it would work.
I don't think it would work. The trade is coming out so soon, but buy number one now, because I'm going to be talking to every single person I know or who comes into either shop about this book, because I can't sing its praises enough.
Yeah.
Wild's End, The Enemy Within, number one.
And they just spend like the beginning of this book is just this great argument between these two sci-fi writers about the nature of sci-fi writing. And it starts out kind of genteel and they're being polite to each other. And then like the argument escalates. Like Dan Abnett is just so goddamn good at writing.
I just get lost in these pages. They're it's so good.
Yeah.
And he so perfectly writes like accents. Where I can just like hear them talking in those like wonderful British accents like so perfectly.
Absolutely.
Like, some people I feel like have a really hard time writing accents. Dan Abnett is not one of those people.
And it's not over the top. It doesn't feel like he's packing all that stuff in just to like signify where these people are from. It's just done so smart. Anyway, that's Wild's End, The Enemy Within, number one. Brand new this week from, was that Boom?
Boom Studios.
Boom Studios. Were you going to ask me what my pick was?
I was going to give you a little intro, yeah.
Hit me.
Okay.
No, don't clap. Let's just do it.
Oh, okay. Hey, Nick, what's your book this week?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. It's Castro, a graphic novel by Reinhard Kleist. I wish I had thought about that name before I said it out loud.
Reinhard Kleist.
I think I nailed it.
Thank you. Great.
Yeah.
This is an English translation of a book that originally came out in German and thus in Germany in 2010. It is exactly what it sounds like. It's a biography of Castro in a way. It's about a photographer that goes down, a journalist that goes down to Cuba at the beginning stages of the revolution and is trying to track him down and seeing like what's going on with this dude, what's going on with this revolution, trying to get the inside story. And through that, we learn the story of what's happening in Cuba and the story of Castro. It's fantastic.
So what I really liked about this book is it seems to me that growing up in the United States, we get a certain side of Castro in our education system. And this was a really nice, fresh look for me.
Yeah.
At the man who is Fidel Castro.
Telling a different side of it.
Absolutely. Like,
and not romanticizing it, really.
No. But it's interesting. Like, the images that I'm used to seeing of Castro are Castro the politician and Castro the guerrilla fighter, the rebel. But in this book, you know, and through this guy's eyes, these things actually happened. You know, he's like in a hammock. It's really interesting to see like Fidel Castro like sitting on a blanket, talking to people. Of course, he does these things in his life, but as someone educated in the American public school system, it's not something I'm used to seeing. I love this book. I thought the art was amazing.
So the art's got kind of a. It reminded me of like Kagan McLeod. It reminded me of the Gabriel Ba, Fabio Moon, kind of that kind of aesthetic.
This is all black and white.
It's all black and white. The whole thing's black and white. The faces are just out of this world. Just super expressive, and everybody's so distinct just from looking at them. You just like know exactly what's going on. There's so much work happening in just the facial expressions of this book. Yeah, that's Castro, Reinhard Kleist, from Arsenal Press.
What's the price on that bad boy? Big old soft cover.
Not but $22.95.
Deal.
For this book. It'll keep you busy for a while, too. Yep, that's Castro, a graphic novel. Those are our big picks. Our big picks for the week were Drawn Onward and Avatar, Smoke and... What was that, Jeff?
Smoke and Shadow.
Smoke and Shadow. Those were Jeff's pick. Drawn Onward and Avatar, Smoke and Shadow. Christian chose Lose, number 7, from Michael DeForge. Marcus's pick was Wild's End, The Enemy Within, number 1, and I picked Castro, graphic novel. Do we have a pull box this week?
We certainly do. I will say that this week our pull box is there's more variety in it between single issues and graphic novels, because a lot of graphic novels came out this week, and we definitely want to highlight them a little bit.
There was a bunch of graphic novels.
Bunch of them,
week.
And
crazy.
Some really, really, really good ones.
And kind of a light single issue week.
Yeah, very bizarre.
Yeah.
I'm going to kick it off with a book called Democracy.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big, beautiful trade paperback put out by Bloomsbury, a little tale of ancient Greece.
The Birth of Democracy.
The Birth of Democracy. As a history nut, I loved this book.
Yeah, it's really the history of Leander, right?
Yep.
The Greek dude.
The Greek dude, the father of democracy.
Yeah.
From Athens.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. It's a really great soft cover. Come pick it up. You'll be happy you did.
Hey, guess what, you guys?
What's up?
Weird World came out this week. Woo! It's the best. I love Weird World so much. Jason Aaron, Mike Del Mundo. I'm stoked. What else came out this week?
We got the continuing saga of Rumble. Yeah, Rumble number 7. Keeps kicking tons of butt.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't checked out this book yet, please do. I was expecting very little from Rumble when it first came out, and it just keeps picking up steam and surprising me at every turn.
Yeah.
John Arcudi, the writer of it, has been doing BPRD stuff, writing BPRD for Mike Mignola for 15 years, and this is him doing his own supernatural paranormal stuff, and he's knocking out of the park. Super good stuff. Rumble number 7.
Jeff, what's in your pile?
We got Fury number 1, part of the 50 years of S.H.I.E.L.D. One-shots they've been doing. Super, super awesome story of both 1965 Nick Fury and modern-day Nick Fury meeting up via time travel. Awesome stuff dealing with racism, dealing with the changing of times, dealing with how crazy time travel is, and how awesome Nick Fury is. Definitely worth picking up.
I found the format of this tiresome. So the it's like two stories running simultaneously the whole time, or do they give that up at some point?
They give that up pretty quickly, actually. It's like after the first couple pages, it's done with the dual storytelling.
Wow, it felt like it was going on forever, and I just bailed.
I loved that element.
Oh, you liked it a lot?
That part
yeah,
was
cool. I liked that too.
Oh, okay, well, you know, I'm the lone voice of reason yet again.
That's one way to put it. Hey, really going continuing the trade paperback route, the comic book story of beer, the world's favorite beverage from 1700 BC to today's craft brewing revolution. This is a book written by Jonathan Hennessy and Mike Smith. The art is Aaron McConnell. Do you like beer? Does history interest you? This is a great book. I personally love beer.
They're playing up beer in that book. Apparently, none of us would be here.
If it wasn't for beer.
If it wasn't for beer.
And just a really enjoyable read, period.
Yeah.
There's also a great little panel in this book of a neon Pabst Blue Ribbon sign. It's drawn expertly.
Did it for you?
As a lover of neon Pabst Blue Ribbon signs.
I defy you to read this book and not drink a beer.
I wasn't planning on having a beer today.
I wasn't either.
And then I started reading this book. I was like,
You cannot.
You can't
read
do it.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Should we homebrew?
Well, Vault 3. Craft brew. Graphic novels. Just saying.
Same time.
Come put it out there. I just want to point out that like the comic book history of beer and the comic book history of democracy came out in the same week.
Yeah.
Coincidence? I think so.
Yeah, I think it's probably just a coincidence. Over the Garden Wall, number 2 of 4, came out this week. Just a couple days ago, I rewatched all of this. The whole thing's like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I had a magical morning. I just wanted to share that with you guys.
I'm going to do it tomorrow. Convinced me.
Any listener, anybody at all, just on a nice fall morning, just watch all of Over the Garden Wall in one sitting and just get ready to have a great day after that. That's my challenge to you. Over the Garden Wall, number 2. Jeff, do you have any other picks?
I do. I have one more. Pale Fire by M.K. Reed and Farrell Dalrymper came out. It is a trade paperback, self-contained little guy. Super, super awesome. Farrell Dalrymple you'll recognize as being the author of Wrenchies, which is our book of the month, is so awesome. And this one is great. It's a nice story about teenagers and dealing with popularity, drugs, arson, you name it. It's in this book. Super awesome. Definitely worth picking up and reading.
Anything by Farrell Dalrymple. Anything.
Gonna get read.
Yeah, it's gonna get read. Christian, what else you got?
What I got is it's a very slight smattering of Secret Wars titles this week from Marvel. My favorite Secret Wars title, 1872, just came out. It is essentially the Marvel Universe set in the Wild West.
But you love Westerns.
But here's the thing, I love Westerns. Fun fact, Christian Silbrice, 31 years old, doesn't know how to drive a car, but I can ride out of a horse. The shit out of a horse.
Thank you. There you go. You can swear.
I was really confused.
Okay. Yeah.
And they just do that. You ride them. They just do whatever you want. They're horses. Who cares?
Yeah.
But in this book in particular, something's happened to Sheriff Steve Rogers, a.k.a. Captain America, and my man Sheriff Red Wolf is on the hunt. This is the Red Wolf show. He's running around kicking tons of butt. My understanding is that Red Wolf is originally a 1970s character made by Marvel, and he will feature very heavily in Marvel's all-new, all-different series. It's kind of a big deal to have a Native American up in Marvel Comics that is a new number one. I'm pretty excited about it, and he is kicking tons of butt.
Excellent. Marcus, what was up, dude?
Christian said it. I was going to be like, yeah, he's got a new number one coming out.
Oh, very cool.
Should be dope. He's a real good shot.
Does that pretty much do it? Do we have it this week in Marvel? So there's some other things in the pile here. So The New Deal, another graphic novel from Jonathan Case, the dude that did Green River Killer, among other books. The art's spectacular. Like it normally is from this guy. The Spire came out this week. All right, man. I love The Spire.
It's good stuff.
Cool.
I think there's not a huge readership on The Spire.
They're an enthusiastic lot.
They are
enthusiastic.
That's yes, exactly. I am enthusiastic about The Spire. I can back that up. That does it for our poll box this week. There's not really a This Week in Marvel. This Week in Secret Wars, because there weren't a ton of Secret Wars books. The titles have really slowed down for Secret Wars. And we got hit in the face with it this week.
Yeah.
So there was 1872, E for Extinction, and
Weird World.
And Weird World. And is that it?
There was Years of Future Past.
Years of Future Past. Yeah. So. Oh, and then we have Inhumans. Was that a Secret Wars book, though?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It is.
Rising.
And Runaways.
And Runaways.
Very, very good. All right. That's the poll box.
Guys, we didn't pick a cover of the week.
No, we didn't. And now there's no time.
There's no time.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We're just going to have to pick a really good one next week.
Deal.
Let's go on to our citizen question.
It's the citizen question.
Jay asks, succinctly, what do you dudes think of the upcoming Marvel hip-hop variants? Keep, first of all, Jay, keep the succinct questions coming. Any listener, I love a succinct question. It's the best.
Yeah.
It requires no editing or thought.
Well, what is the deal with these upcoming Marvel hip-hop variants?
So, first of all, do you guys know that Marvel's doing a whole bunch of hip-hop cover variants?
Only because people are going crazy for them already and they're not even out yet.
A lot of demand for them.
Yeah.
So what's the deal? Christian, what's happening with these variants?
What's the deal? Sugar Hill. So as part of Marvel's new, all different relaunch where every comic is post-Secret Wars, every comic will in the Marvel Universe will start with a new number one. And all of those number one issues will have a variant cover that will be an homage to a classic hip-hop album cover of years past.
Can you give us some examples?
Sure. We've got we have an Avengers cover, which will feature my man, Miles Morales, as the main Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. That is an homage to the Roots Illadelph Half-Life. All new Hawkeye will be an homage to Pete Rock and CL Smooth. Mecha and the Soul Brother, an album that Curtis put me onto at the young age of 12. Thanks, Curtis. We have an amazing Spider-Man cover that looks like Tribe Called Quest, Midnight Marauders, an excellent album.
Yeah, and it goes on and on. There are, because there's a ton of new titles coming out, and I think they're all getting a hip-hop variant cover.
I believe so.
Or damn near all of them. So before we get into our thoughts, so this has, like Marcus mentioned, this has caused a little minor stir. There's pretty a big stir for some folks.
A lot of people are coming into the shop asking, how do I get the hip-hop variant covers? One dude told me that he has requested all of the release days off work. He's taking a half day on all of them to try to get these covers.
For our first-come, first-serve policy.
For our first-come, first-serve policy.
It's going to cost that dude his job.
I got bad news on some fronts, my friends.
Thanks, Marvel and your parent company, yeah. Disney.
So a lot of these covers are going to be really, really, really hard to get. Mm-hmm. Because we get them, and every comic shop gets them, based on order incentives.
So this is not what we were planning on talking about here, but
it's important.
It is important that, like, to get these covers, you have to exceed orders for the book. So let's say that I want this pretty sweet Jizz's Liquid Swords cover, which is Contest of Champions number one, done in the style of Liquid Swords. You have to have ordered 150% of, say, some random-ass Marvel book.
That you've already ordered.
That we ordered months ago.
So this is the problem, is like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah. I think I have it down. A lot of these books, their incentive percentages have just recently been announced, and they're announced for books that we have already ordered.
That's correct.
So if we didn't order enough of the book, not knowing that it would matter for the hip-hop variant,
yeah,
we're out of luck.
Yeah, so we have to order book at, you know, we ordered book X a few months ago, and now they're saying, if you want this variant, then you have to order book Y 150% more than book X.
Yeah.
Which is really, really weird, because especially if we ordered really heavy on a book anyway, then that's like, you know, it gets really tricky. It's a very strange and arbitrary system for like trying to get books that otherwise, if we could just order them, we would sell them, you know, almost in unlimited amounts.
So just know that if you want these variant covers, not every comic shop is going to just have them available.
Yeah, they're going to be super
They're going to be super hard to come by.
Yeah. But so that's one reason why they've caused a bit of a stir, is that people really like them. The other reason why they've caused a stir is because some people find them kind of offensive. They have angered some folks. And I think it's worth getting into a little bit, like what's going on there. So the argument against them, there's two things. Some of them are just stupid.
Correct.
So some of them are like, so you take a cover like Notorious B.I.G. Ready to Die, which originally was, it's a baby. He's got an afro. He's sitting on an all-white background. It's really like impactful cover.
And right above it, it's a baby, and it says
Ready to Die. Yeah.
There's a lot of things to say there. It's about accepting your own mortality, maybe, when you're in a situation you can't change.
Mm-hmm.
When you're really even too young to know what's going on, you know that your time is limited.
Yep. About an album that's like really important to a lot of people and is like, you know, came out and gave a voice to like a, you know, we don't want to overgeneralize too much, but that cover has a lot going on. And it's really impactful. And what Marvel has done is made Ready to Shrink, and it's Ant-Man, and he kind of looks like a baby, and he's on the cover. So that's just kind of dumb. Like, the bum rush the Chimichangas. This is Public Enemy. This is Deadpool number one.
The Avengers team that Deadpool will now be on.
Exactly.
Homage to
the Bum album. Rush the Show. Yeah, Bum Rush the Show. Yeah. And again, like, Public Enemy
is like the political rap group. They were a pretty big deal. Like, the FBI was actively watching them as a voice of dissent.
Okay, so I know nothing about rap.
Okay.
I have zero context. When I see these covers, I think like, oh, Ant-Man is a baby. That's kind of cute. Marvel's been doing a lot of baby things lately.
Yeah.
Cool. So I need you guys to break it down for me. Like, when people are getting upset about this, I don't understand why, because I did not grow up, nor have I been exposed to much of rap culture.
So that's why. And we are, in full disclosure, we are just talking as some white dudes right now. We are owning that 100%. But maybe you don't want to see, it's like, Public Enemy is another one of these things, like Christian just said, it's the most effective and popular and really, you know, for in terms of political rap, there's nobody that's like more effective or well known than Public Enemy. Or at least they're up there, right?
Sure.
You can't have that conversation without talking about Public Enemy.
Absolutely.
It's really, really important to some people.
Their name is Public Enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. So to reduce that to Bum Rush the Chimichangas is stupid. Like, there's a lot of album covers that you could have chosen. Maybe you don't choose a Public Enemy album. Maybe you don't choose Ready to Die. Maybe you don't take an image that's important to a lot of people and is impactful and is saying a lot about a community that is not really involved in the making of these comics to a large degree, which we're going to talk about in a second. Maybe you just don't choose that cover. Does that kind of make sense?
It does.
So that's the first thing, is that some of the covers are stupid. The second thing, and there's no real way of getting around this, the people making these decisions and the editorialship and the creators and the artists, by and large, are white. So before we did the show, we did a little bit of research, and I asked these guys, so like, if you had to guess what percentage of Marvel and DC, this is for 2014, what percentage of editors, artists, writers, what percentage are black? And Marcus, what was your guess?
I said 13.
And Christian, what was your guess?
I said 8%, and I feel like that was even high.
The answer is 1.2%.
Ugh.
Man.
Yeah, it's comically low. These are things like, this is not disqualifying in any way. I'm not saying that like you're not allowed to reference or enjoy rap for being white, like, obviously.
Sure.
Right? But these are just things that like when it raises an eyebrow, these are the reasons why. Like, there's a little bit of insensitivity about the content that you're choosing. And then you raise the other eyebrow at who's making these decisions. So anyway, that's, as I understand it, as we've kind of understood it, that's the controversy about these covers in a nutshell. Did we hit all the bases?
I believe so. Yeah, and from a purely visual standpoint, some of these covers are look just
okay,
awesome.
So here's the other thing. This is the last part of the conversation, is I really love some of these covers.
Yeah.
Like, I want to talk about The Mystic. This is Doctor Strange as Dr. Dre for The Chronic. It's called The Mystic. That shit is awesome.
Yeah. That's wild.
We're scrolling through some of these now.
And some
of Midnight Marauders cover with Spider-Man.
Some of these albums are 25, 30 years old.
Yeah.
And that's like, there's been two whole generations of comic readers that have happened since these came in. And I am really excited about younger readers asking me, hey, why does this cover have Kamala Khan's face on a desk? And I'll get to be like, oh, hey, that's a really great album from Lauryn Hill, former member of the Fugees, called The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. It'll blow your mind. Check it out.
I love the idea that somebody is going to like read the new Spider-Man book and then wonder what is this album referencing, and then listen to Illmatic.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Someone's not going to know who DJ Premier is, and then their life is going to be lived in two.
What if you find out who DJ Premier is because of this?
Because of Spider-Man.
Because of Spider-Man? That's my favorite shit, you guys.
That's awesome.
So I'm just going to say I'm kind of one of those people right now. I don't know hardly any of these names you're throwing out, and I'm totally going to go check them out.
That's great.
That's great news. So that part of it is really cool. But I say that as just somebody that really likes rap music and really likes comic books.
There's a
lot of other things to consider besides just those two things.
Absolutely.
And maybe Marvel didn't do such a great job considering those things, and also their reaction to it maybe hasn't been the strongest. There is a great article about this on The Guardian that we're going to link to in the show notes. And for some of the stats that we used to talk about this, Bleeding Cool did a great rundown of it, and all of this stuff we'll link to. Is super interesting. The whole thing,
and
just,
and there's often been a commingling of hip hop and comic books, particularly Marvel comic books, but it comes from the hip hop side. There's not like really a meeting of the aisle of Marvel being like, hey, what's up with this rap thing?
Yeah, you found out something really interesting.
Yeah,
actually.
There's a few things. Like, so the first recorded rap song in a major label is Rapper's Delight. The centerpiece of this song is what is affectionately called the Superman rap. And this is about some guy having like a kind of like Casanova persona where he's really, really good with the ladies, and he starts chatting up one young lady, and it's Lois Lane.
Yeah.
And he busts out some pretty cool lines like, flying through the air in pantyhose, he may be very sexy or even cute, but he looks like a sucker in a blue and red suit. I say, do you need a man who's got finesse and his whole name across his chest? That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
There are some like other like weird, you know, insensitive things towards the homosexual people earlier in the verse, and that's definitely a bummer. But that needs his whole name across his chest line. That's pretty awesome.
And this is like arguably this is the beginning of commercial rap.
Is comics.
Comic books right there.
Totally rad.
Yeah. And a bunch, you know, these comic books have always been referenced in rap, going way, way back. I don't know that there's such a history. To hear Marvel talk about it, you'd think that it's like this commingling thing that's going both ways.
No,
I don't know
just,
if that's the case.
It's just Ghostface Killer from the Wu-Tang Clan deciding that his name is Tony Stark, he's Iron Man.
Exactly.
It's just Method Man saying, hey, I'm Johnny Blaze, who's Ghost Rider, and I think he's Johnny Blaze because he smokes a lot of weed.
Wait, what?
He's blazing a lot, is what I think it is.
Method Man smokes weed?
I think so.
Oh, I'm gonna have to do some.
I gotta look at some more lyrics, but this is, you know, I don't want to make any judgment calls, but
I think you're jumping to conclusions.
I mean, I saw that movie, How High or whatever. So once,
I do want to say I think it's interesting. I can't think of another genre of music that would that if given the variant cover treatment would have such a response than rap music.
Yeah, and there's
reasons for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I totally get it, but.
So yeah, we're not saying anyone's right or anyone's wrong. We're just trying to be aware of some stuff.
I'm saying they're a little wrong, but keep going.
Yeah.
Marvel's a little wrong.
They're a little wrong.
Yeah.
By just not they're not continuing the conversation.
Yeah, I really like what they did. I like the consequence of it, but it was maybe a little ham-fisted.
Little ham-fisted. I'll back you up there. Kind of barge in and assume they were right.
Yeah.
Classic superhero move, you know? Barging in, starting a fight.
Blow stuff up. Knock down buildings.
Yeah, chill out. Just listen. I just want to put on everybody's radar a song that came out a couple years ago by Last Emperor called Secret Wars. And it is the plot of Secret Wars, but it's all of his, it's all the heroes and villains teamed up to try to battle rap all of Last Emperor's favorite MCs. So it's like Redman versus Bruce Banner, who turns into the Hulk in the middle of the rap. And he imitates all these rappers and imitates all these heroes and villains.
I love what you're saying.
It is the whip shit. Last Emperor by Secret Wars. It's my top pick from Secret Wars this week.
That sounds amazing.
Well, Jay, that's what we think about the Marvel covers, the Marvel hip-hop variants. Thanks for your question. I think you still get a hat. I don't think we've put a moratorium on that soon. Oh, it's not going to last forever, no. People.
Maybe get a hat. Yeah.
I think you get a hat for that. But keep sending us questions, and maybe you can keep winning hats if we feel like it. Jay definitely does get one.
I've got one last thing.
What is it?
Yeah. For my man Jeff and Marcus and just any of our listeners that are excited about the prospect and history of hip-hop music.
Yeah.
Please check out the comic book by Ed Piskor, published by Fantagraphics Publishing, Hip Hop Family Tree. It is an incredible, reverent, information-packed, hilarious history, very respectful, humorous history of the roots and beginnings of hip-hop. And it is jam-packed with information. It's got a great cartooning style. It's huge, large format, also comes out in single issues. I've read a slew of books. I've listened to a ton of records. I've DJed a good 100 rap shows with MCs. And I still learned a shitload of stuff from this comic book.
It's just a great comic book besides.
In general, but just jam-packed with info. The only downside is that you'll have to go and listen to a ton of awesome rap records and have your mind blown.
Damn it.
You will effectively give yourself a second job of listening to a ton of great hip-hop.
Yeah, Hip Hop Family Tree.
Ed Piskor, Fantagraphics. Check it.
That's a much better note to end the podcast on. Jeff, thank you so much for hanging out with us, man.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
I can't wait to hear your and Charlie's your project when it all comes together.
Yeah, me too.
And that's going to be round about the 14th or so. We'll see.
Yep, 14th of October.
We'll see what Rachel Polk has to say about that. And Marcus? A pleasure as always.
Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure.
Christian, thanks for being Curtis today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're a great Curtis.
I tried to cuss less than I normally do. You know, Curtis is working on the same thing and we could all improve.
So. I think you're absolutely right. Thus ends another issue of Super Skull, the Vault of Midnight podcast. You can hear us every Wednesday wherever you get your podcasts. Our music was created by A-Bomb. Our logo was designed by Philip Wong. Our producer is Rachel Polk. Hey, Rachel. Thanks, Rachel. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at SuperSkullShow is where you can find us. You can check out our website, SuperSkullShow.com. You can send us questions that we will answer and we'll reward you with hats occasionally. Super Skull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996. This is Nick Weibar for Jeff Millard, Christian Silberice, and Marcus Schwimmer. Wishing you good reading. Until next week, please. I solved the riddle. I solved the riddle of the coffee. Fucking dork.
Nick Weibar solving problems every day.
Oh, David Bowie.
What about David Bowie?
He's a special guest on this week's episode.
Is he calling us from... deepest space.
From outer space, man.